When Adolf Hitler rose to power in Germany, he didn't storm the gates with tanks and soldiers. He was invited in by establishment politicians who thought they could control him. Franz von Papen, a conservative leader who helped make Hitler chancellor, confidently declared, "We've engaged him for ourselves. Within 2 months, we will have pushed him so far into a corner that he'll squeal." Within a year, Hitler had consolidated absolute power, and von Papen was lucky to escape with his life. This pattern repeats throughout history. Democracies rarely die at the hands of generals anymore. They die at the ballot box when elected leaders gradually dismantle the very institutions meant to constrain them. Venezuela's Rafael Caldera pardoned coup plotter Hugo Chavez, believing him harmless. 5 years later, Chavez was president. When asked where he was going upon his release from prison, Chavez simply replied, "To power." What makes this reality so disturbing is how it challenges our fundamental understanding of democratic stability. The guardrails protecting our systems are far more fragile than we've assumed. The warning signs are clear for those willing to see them. Rejection of democratic rules, denial of opponents' legitimacy, tolerance of violence, and willingness to curtail civil liberties. When a leader exhibits even one of these traits, democracy faces genuine danger. Charles Lindbergh, Nazi sympathizer and America First spokesman, never reached the presidency thanks to political parties' gatekeeping, not public virtue. Other extremist demagogues like Father Coughlin, with his anti-Semitic radio show reaching 40 million listeners, and Huey Long, who built the nearest approach to a totalitarian state, were similarly blocked. Party leaders' smoke-filled rooms kept these figures from power. Even Henry Ford, despite his wealth and popularity, couldn't overcome Republican gatekeepers' rejection. As Ford noted, only dismantling the party system would enable his candidacy. While undemocratic, this gatekeeping protected against dangerous demagogues whom the founders feared might pay obsequious court to the people before becoming tyrants. Their solution? Parties balancing representation with candidate filtration served effectively for nearly two centuries. The 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago marked a crisis point with Vietnam casualties, major assassinations, and party turmoil. Hubert Humphrey won the nomination without entering primaries while police battled protesters outside. This led to the 1971 McGovern-Fraser Commission reforms, creating binding presidential primaries that shifted power from party leaders to voters, changes the DNC chair called the greatest goddamn changes since the party system. Political scientists cautioned that binding primaries could enable extremists. Initially, outsiders like Jackson and Buchanan failed, as success required navigating the invisible primary of early establishment support. This system held until wealthy celebrities began circumventing it. From 1996 to 2016, 18 outsiders entered presidential primaries. Trump's 2015 campaign faced weakened party gatekeepers, unlimited outside money, and alternative media. Despite minimal party endorsements, Trump dominated early primaries with $2 billion in free media coverage and right-wing media support. Though he displayed all four measures of authoritarian behavior, Republican leaders failed to stop his rise, unlike conservatives in other democracies who blocked extremists. When Alberto Fujimori won Peru's 1990 election, he attacked opposing institutions, calling critics unproductive charlatans and judges jackals. By 1992, he had dissolved Congress and suspended the Constitution. This pattern repeats in failing democracies. Would-be authoritarians first attack democratic institutions rhetorically, labeling opponents as enemies or terrorists. As society polarizes, they capture the referees by taking control of judicial and law enforcement agencies. By installing loyalists in courts and regulatory bodies, autocrats protect themselves while targeting opponents. Hungary's Orbán replaced civil servants with partisans, while Peru's Montesinos bribed judges. Argentina's Perón impeached independent judges, transforming neutral institutions into partisan weapons. They then used legal attacks to neutralize opponents. Ecuador's Correa won a $40 million libel suit against El Universo. Turkey's Erdogan crippled Dogan Media with a $2.5 billion tax fine. Other outlets self-censor, like Venezuela's Venevision abandoning political coverage. Finally, they change rules to cement power. Post-Reconstruction Tennessee Democrats used poll taxes and literacy tests to eliminate black voting. By 1896, black turnout had virtually disappeared, establishing white supremacy and single-party rule for decades. Crises accelerate this democratic erosion. Americans revere their Constitution, but it alone cannot protect democracy. Even nations with strong constitutions, like Germany's Weimar Republic, have fallen to autocratic rule. Democracy depends on two unwritten norms: mutual toleration and institutional forbearance. Mutual toleration means accepting political rivals as legitimate opponents, while forbearance means avoiding actions that, though legal, violate democratic spirit. These norms evolved gradually in America. The early republic witnessed fierce conflict between Federalists and Republicans, who viewed each other as traitors, as seen in the 1798 Sedition Act outlawing government criticism. The 1850s saw these norms collapse over slavery. Southern planters viewed Republican abolitionism as an existential threat, leading to congressional violence and ultimately the Civil War. Lincoln suspended habeas corpus, and many states skipped the 1864 election. Mutual toleration only reemerged after the 1877 Compromise ended Reconstruction and removed racial equality from politics. For most of American history, institutional forbearance prevailed. The Senate used the filibuster sparingly. Cabinet nominations faced minimal opposition, and Supreme Court nominees enjoyed high confirmation rates from 1880 to 1980. America's democratic norms began eroding when Newt Gingrich entered Congress in the late 1970s, reframing politics as a war for power and instructing Republicans to label Democrats as pathetic and traitors. As Speaker in 1995, Gingrich abandoned the presumption of opponents' good faith. Republican tactics intensified during Clinton's presidency, with filibusters increasing from 7 to 80 annually, culminating in Clinton's impeachment on technical grounds. Partisan warfare escalated through the Bush and Obama years. Right-wing media portrayed Obama as Marxist and anti-American, rhetoric Republican leaders adopted. Senate obstruction reached unprecedented levels, with 385 filibusters between 2007-2012, matching all filibusters from World War I through Reagan. Democrats responded by limiting filibuster powers. Key examples of Democratic decay included the 2011 debt ceiling crisis, GOP senators undermining Obama's Iran diplomacy, and the unprecedented blockade of Merrick Garland's Supreme Court nomination. America's democratic traditions began eroding in the late 1970s when Newt Gingrich transformed politics into warfare, treating opponents as immoral rather than legitimate adversaries. This partisan hostility escalated through Bush's presidency and reached new heights in 2008 when right-wing media portrayed Obama as Marxist and anti-American. American democracy isn't invulnerable. The Civil War proves we're susceptible to political catastrophe. While the system recovered, subsequent stability relied on racial exclusion. Full democratization after 1965 paradoxically sparked the partisan realignment driving today's polarization. Defending democracy requires building coalitions across ideological lines, temporarily setting aside divisive issues to unite against authoritarianism. The core challenge remains extreme partisan division rooted in racial and religious differences. Solutions must include party reform and universal social policies to address economic inequality. Though America's constitutional system is historically robust, it faces democracy-threatening pathologies. our democratic norms, previously sustained by racial exclusion, must now function in an era of racial equality and ethnic diversity. Few nations have successfully combined multiracial society with genuine democracy. That's America's true test of exceptionalism.